Welcome to the latest Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast, brought to you from the Aquarium Rush Studios in downtown Grand Rapids, Michigan. My name is Ben.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Charles.
Heaters.
They heat things up?
They heat things up. The classic, like, I think one of our myths, one of our classic things that people believe that isn't true about bettas is they don't need heaters, right? And that, to me, that was the inspiration for this episode. Bettas need heaters.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's be specific here.
Betta Splendid needs heaters.
Ooh, I like where
domestic
that was
bettas.
Excellent.
Hint Charles on my
like,
list
wait,
later.
Wait.
Betta Splendid needs heaters. They still said they. Mm-hmm. Betta Splendid needs. Yeah, that's right. Trying to get my grammar there correct. I'm just messing it all up.
You got your mom's voice in your head now
after the last episode. But there are fish that we keep on a regular basis that don't necessarily need them.
This is actually one of our more common questions.
Yeah.
What fish can I keep without a heater? Yeah. A heater is an extra $30 on top of what you're already spending. So some people can't quite get over that hump and some people just don't want to deal with them.
But if you were going to buy a heater, where would you go to buy a heater, Amy?
Oh, you could go to watercolorsaquariumgallery.com. We do have the Fluval series of heaters up there, which is definitely our go-to. But we have started playing around with the Owaze, and we might get those up there too.
Just so you know, this is our shameless plug. We do it every episode.
Oh,
we want you to buy stuff.
And, you know, we have more than heaters there too.
We have stickers.
Really? What else do we have?
We have t-shirts. We have mugs. A couple of mugs went out last month. That was pretty fun.
We have 4 or 5 of them go out of the shop here for Christmas too.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like them. And live aquarium plants. So whatever we have here that's looking great, that's usually what I'm putting on the site. Check them out.
Out of curiosity, and our little friendly competition with the designs on the merch. Like,
I haven't been keeping track. Charles said he was.
Okay. I want to know. So
he's looking at me like he hasn't been.
I lost track about a month ago.
Amy and I do the designs for the merch.
It's not fair because you did the watercolors one.
Oh, we don't have to count that one. No, we do have to count that one. You have the betta. I need that.
I think, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think I've sold more stickers,
but
you've sold more t-shirts and mugs.
Oh, so I sold more of the expensive stuff and you sell the cheap little stuff.
Exactly. Exactly.
Stylistically, in case you're wondering, if it's got color on it, it's Amy's design. If it's the line drawing stuff similar to the angelfish in the Watercolors Aquarium Gallery logo, those are my designs. That's my stuff.
Cast your votes now.
That's right.
Last I was keeping track, Amy was ahead, but then people started buying t-shirts about a month ago, but then I lost track.
Right. We'll have to do a little add up.
It's a mystery.
Yes. Well, anyway, these are our top 5 aquarium fish that don't need heaters. I want to put a little qualifier in there, right? My basement yesterday morning was 58 degrees.
Mm.
And there are fish on my list that would not be okay in that.
I kind of judged on room temperature.
Yeah.
Like, high 60s, low 70s.
Yeah, I kind of assumed that I had like 65 degrees Fahrenheit, which is about 18 degrees Celsius.
For me too, yeah.
As my minimum.
Got to be able to take it below 70.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean the whole time, but it has to be okay if at certain times the temperature drops below 70. And I just realized I missed an entire category of fish. Hang on. Just 1 second.
There's a ridiculous number of options for
there
this
are.
One.
Right.
In fact, somebody there may be that. More that can go in that low 70s, high 60s than can't.
Yeah.
I think that's true. Yeah.
So can I steal and go first because you basically led into one I do want to talk about really bad?
You know, you just did this to me last week, Charles. Fine. I'll be the gracious one.
Yay.
Stick to what you're good at. And stick to what you're good at, Charles.
Betta Unimaculata. Most of the mouth brooding bettas can actually handle a lot lower temperatures. Mike Helwig, in fact, thinks that his success with some of the pugnet complex bettas is that, and I quote, I didn't realize the heater stopped working. And he only figured it out because he put his hand in, and he actually like pulled his hand out because he was like, that is cold.
Wow.
And it was like, I think he said when he checked, it was like 64 degrees.
Wow.
And there were multiple males holding.
Nice.
With the Una Maculatas, I got them down to 67 and they seemed fine. So I'd say definitely anywhere between 68 and 72 is amazing. At least for me, they seemed to stop spawning when it got above 75, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that's a perfect way to kind of do a little more emphasis on how we started this podcast out, right? You said at 68 degrees, they seemed fine, which meant you watched and observed the behavior, and they were feeding properly. They were begging the way Una Maculatas should be begging. And like you said, they were spawning. Whereas with Betta Splendid, somebody might say, I never had a heater on my Betta Splendids and it did just fine. Well, I'd almost guarantee you it spent a lot of its time listlessly lying on the bottom of the tank.
Yeah.
Right? Doing nothing, you mean?
Shivering.
Ugh.
Yes. However, Una Maculata,
it's a completely different animal.
Oh, I mean, it's a hill stream betta.
Yes.
Yeah.
It comes from a completely different habitat. Betta splendens comes from stagnant, like shallow pools where they
lowland
get...
Lowland stagnant shallow pools.
Yeah. Right. Whereas like Una Maculatas comes from mountain streams that are, you know, being spring fed predominantly, and... It's a different habitat entirely.
Either a spring or snowmelt. That's where their water is coming from.
We were up in the mountains in Thailand, and it was cold. It was 45 degrees up there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good shortcut to thinking about, okay, what type of fish can I have? If you know where they come from, you can sort of make some guesses at what their environment should be like.
The higher the elevation, the cooler the water.
Yeah.
The more northern or more southern, although we really need to think about it mostly more northern, because as you go south, there's less habitat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, I would say mouth brooding bettas in general, I think as across the board, with few exceptions, low 70s is a necessity. Like, given my experiences with a couple of different species where like, if it starts getting in the upper 70s, they stop being interested. Right. Like, you're not going to have success with them.
Another little insert that we need to say there. Low 70s means you keep your house at 72.
Mm-hmm.
You don't drop it to 68 at night, right? Mid to upper 60s, and then it can be that you drop your house to 68 degrees at night.
Yeah.
In the wintertime.
I honestly think like the bigger species, like the Una Maculata complex, like Ocelotas and other bettas like that, they can handle that dip down. I don't see why not. Mm-hmm. Because those kind of streams would do that. Like, that's what happens.
Right.
It's probably safe to at least assume, for the sake of not killing fish, that your tank's a couple degrees colder than your room is.
I think that's a very good point. And if you're the kind of person that keeps your thermostat at 62 during the winter, by the way, never invite me to your house, ever. Well, okay, maybe in the summer. But 62 for a lot of these fish that we're putting on this list is too cold. There are a couple that I have on my list that still would be just fine down to 62 degrees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you see those ideal temperature ranges, let's say on Seriously Fish or whatever, that's the temperatures that those environments have been tested at. So you can sort of assume a degree or two in either direction is probably fine.
Yeah. Agreed. Now, that's you started us off on a high note, hit it out of the park with that one. And I'm going to go with, to me, I would consider the classic. This is the fish that I would have. If you keep your house at 62 degrees, this fish is just fine. If you keep your house at 80, this fish is just fine. It is just versatile. And I think I've probably brought it up on five other lists, including one of the most underrated fish in the house. You guys know where I'm going with that, right?
Yeah, I specifically didn't put it on my list because I knew it would come up.
This would be the White Cloud Mountain Minnow. Jealous I described someone off his list.
I had it as an alternate because I was going to be really upset if it didn't come up.
It had to come up.
Yeah.
These are such cool little fish. They're super hardy. They would be, I think they're probably on like I said, the underrated fish list, mm-hmm. they're probably on our easiest egg scatterers.
They might have just been on our easy breeders easy list, breeders, too.
Probably both lists.
I know I've put them on at least two.
Yeah, for sure.
They're a fish that you get everything and sacrifice nothing.
Yeah.
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 Exactly.
They're stunning. I never look at a group of white clouds and don't find how beautiful they are remarkable.
Did you say the full common name? Or do we just say white cloud?
Mountain.
So let's go back to the mountain stream conversation
exactly.
we were having.
Like,
yeah, yeah. One of the nicknames for this fish has been called the poor man's neon tetra. And I would say maybe the neon tetra would be called the poor man's white cloud.
Yeah.
Because... Or just don't even put them in the same category.
Why do we need to compare it?
A group of white clouds, after they mature and color up, they're absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. And two male white clouds displaying look better than any neon tetra or cardinal tetra I've mm-hmm. ever seen.
I think they rival the displays of things like pseudomugil rainbows.
Ooh, definitely.
It's yeah. similar yeah. type of vibe.
They get those white edges on those fins.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Easily in a 10-gallon tank, a group of six or 10
yeah.
in a 10-gallon tank.
Depends on your water change schedule.
Yeah. This is assuming
yes.
good husbandry. I would even go down to maybe a 7. I don't know that I would go down to a 5.
I wouldn't.
But I think I would go down to a 7-gallon with a group of 6 just fine.
Yeah, as long as there's enough room to swim. That's really right. what they need.
Right.
They're a lot of fun.
Great with plants. What else can we say about the water chemistry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hard water, soft water, neutral water.
Do not care.
Do not care. Yeah. Easy breeders.
Easy.
There. We talked about it. Awesome. Breeding white clouds. Put them in a tank. Take them out of the tank. Wait for the babies to show up.
Yeah.
Yep.
Simple enough.
Yeah. Or put them in a tank with lots of cover. Watch babies show up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely had that happen. The first time I spawned them was completely unintentional. I had them in a 20-gallon tank, a group of 6, with a bunch of moss. And I looked in there one day, and there weren't 6. There were 12.
Ba-da-ba.
That's good stuff.
Yep. All right, Amy, what you got?
All right, I'm going to start with another classic. Most of the stuff on my list this time are pretty basic because this is a question that I usually get asked by beginners. And I want to be clear that it's such an easy problem to solve. There are mm-hmm. so many fish that work. So I'm starting with the good old standard bristlenose pleco.
Heck yeah. I was hoping somebody would bring that one up.
Mm-hmm. These are another one. Really, whatever aquarium appropriate temperature you keep them at is going to be just fine. They'll be active. They'll eat algae. It's a bristlenose pleco. It does its thing.
I don't think I want to see them colder than 65.
Yeah.
And really, 68 is, like, if every once in a while it gets down to 65, I think you're okay. But 68 to me is what I would consider the lower end
yeah.
of that scale.
And really, 65 and below, that's a cold water tank. You're using a chiller probably at that point.
Well, a lot of people in their houses, if they're you know, all these programmable thermostats that everybody uses, where you're going to have your house warm up to 72 degrees while you're home, but at night drop it down to 65. In a 10-gallon tank, that temperature in that tank could also get down to 65. So that's
true.
Why I'm bringing those up.
Well, especially people who are in basements and stuff like that.
Right.
I've actually had that problem too, and I do heat my house, but there are areas of my house that are colder than others, apparently.
The joys of older houses, right? Like I said, my basement was 58 degrees the other
day. Yeah. Yeesh.
Yeah. Part of that was because we had 12 extra people staying in our house going in and out of the back door.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The back door, the cold air just runs right down in the basement.
I bet.
It wasn't fun, but my fish survived. They didn't like it. I noted that. They didn't like it, but they survived. Yeah, everybody needs bristlenose plecos in their lives. 10-gallon tanks and larger. And 10 gallons is pushing it, but I would put them in a 10.
Yep. Just for how useful they are.
Yeah, exactly.
For some of the bigger, like, we've got one right now that's at, like, a full 6 inches.
That thing is a monster.
But, like, some strains of bristlenose don't get more than 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm. Notably.
So, kind of got to know which one you're getting to.
True. Yeah. So, I got an abantoid that would have handled your temperature drop handily.
Ooh. A gourami?
Which one, Charles?
It's a blue paradise fish.
Nice.
Their listed habitat.
Hang on, I gotta scratch it off my list.
They're listed, so they come from a habitat that's seasonal, and from what I can find in the literature, somewhere between 15 and 26 degrees Celsius is reasonable. Wow. So for Fahrenheit, that's 59 degrees Fahrenheit to 78 degrees Fahrenheit.
One of the websites I saw said down to 50 is actually okay with them.
I fully believe that. Mm-hmm. Cause they're, it's something that varies like that. Like we don't hit negative 10 a lot, but it happens.
Yeah. Right.
You know, yeah. That's just here. Right. I was actually really excited because I was reading like how to breed them. And most of what I can find is like, it's another example of if it's too warm, they're not going to,
yeah,
I guess
yeah.
Their ideal like breeding temperature range is like 65 to like 70 degrees Fahrenheit. I'm like, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Like literally like that. It's a cool water and a bantoid.
I see what you did though. That was a good pun. I like it. Yeah.
Especially for a fish that's also ridiculously colorful.
Yeah.
You don't think about cooler water fish having that sort of vibrancy. That's like a, right. Oh, do you have any tropical fish, right?
Yeah.
So this one's actually at the forefront of my mind because a recent issue of Amazonas was actually a paradise fish oriented. And so it had some really good information on species that most people don't think about. Like when people think paradise fish, they think just the one. Paradise fish mm-hmm. is like a clade, guys. Mm-hmm. There's dozens to choose from of multiple different genera. So give them a look-see. They're pretty varied, but the standard blue paradise fish is a lot more adaptable than most people think it is.
And it's one of the most striking.
Yeah.
I would put them as one of the most striking anabantoids.
Yeah.
And that's all bettas and gouramis, by the way, that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely ostentatious finnage mm-hmm. and ridiculous contrast. Like mm-hmm. it's orange and blue.
And put them in some groups. You're going to see some squabbling?
Rivalries.
Yes.
Rivalries between some of the males, but that's just going to enhance their displays.
Oh,
that's if it's
beautiful.
Too tight of a space, they could get aggressive and maybe do some damage to each other. But if your male to female ratio favors females, the males will get nicely distracted.
And like that's ideal circumstances, but we've literally had fry hatch in a 40 gallon quarantine tank with a dozen of them and literally no decor, so they're really not picky.
Right. Yeah, and again that was in one of our basement quarantine tanks mm-hmm. with no heater.
True.
Yep solid choice. Like I said, I had to scratch it out because it was on my list too. But don't worry, I have ultimates.
Good. Mm-hmm. Can you give me one that is an alternate?
So I cheated.
Ooh.
And I went with a genus. It's not all of the fish in this genus, but it's literally most, and it's certainly most of the commonly available ones. The Xiphophorus genus.
Yeah.
Yep. That's platies and swordtails. So the three Xiphophorus species that we see regularly are Helleri, Maculatus, and Variatus. Helleri is the common swordtail. Maculatus and Variatus are the two different varieties of platies. And most of the colorful swordtails and platies that you see are some combination of those three fish.
Yeah.
Right? Wild type Maculatus, Variatus, and Helleri don't have all those crazy colors. Most of them are green. The common green swordtail is more like really what all three of those fish look like. But other fish in that genus also can take it. In fact, Xiphophorus melinch can go down to 50.
Ooh.
Wow.
Yeah. So I have to have fun stories, right? You know, mm-hmm. that's how I operate. One year, when my pond was newer, I decided I was going to pond raise Xiphophorus helleri. And I had a group of three females and two males, and one of the females was red, the other ones were green, and I popped them all in there to see what I would come up with. I harvested literally hundreds of the most incredibly colored red or green swordtails. You could see exactly how many generations I pulled out, and it was about four or five generations, and I caught five swordtails that were close to 4.5 inches long.
Wow.
Without the swords.
Wow.
Which were probably my original five. The big red female was a monstrous, incredibly gorgeous fish. I caught hundreds of them that were a little bigger than the average size you'd buy at an aquarium store. And again, the colors were incredible. And then I lost track of how many of them that I caught that were in the half inch range. But the fun part about the story is I would go out there in the fall, starting in September, to start harvesting fish and catch as many as I could. And September 30, when the nighttime temperatures were getting down to about 40, I don't know what the temperature in the pond was, but I know when I put my hand in the pond, it was a little bit painful. They were still actively swimming and they were doing just fine. On Halloween that year, we actually had snow flurries and the temperature was in the 20s. I went out to the pond to just go, I'm just going to go take a look and see how the pond is doing. And I saw all these little red dots on the bottom, laying on the bottom of the pond. And it was all little swordtails that I'd missed. I'm like, oh, look, I missed a bunch and they're all dead. But they were really bright red. So I poked one and it didn't move. But again, they were really bright red, right? So I collected them all and I put them in a bucket and I brought the bucket downstairs. And a half hour later, I had a bucket full of healthy swimming swordtails.
That's amazing.
They were fine. I checked the water temperature. The water temperature was 38.
Wow.
They were stunned and they weren't going to move and they weren't going to survive for long at 38 degrees.
But they were alive.
But they were alive. And all of those fish were just fine after that.
Wow.
I've done different swordtail and platy species in that pond over the years. And every single year, I've done Hellerite and I've done Maculatus and I've done Varias. And every single year, I have harvested many swordtails when the air temperature was 45 degrees.
Wow.
So, yeah. Xiphophorus. They breed at lower temperatures. They're fine at 78.
Just not that touchy.
Go. That's it.
Well, if you were going to cheat, then I was really going to cheat because I actually put down platies / swordtails / guppies.
You're going with Pacilia Day as a family.
I was going with, let's say, commercially bred live bears because there are all sorts of little species and stuff like that I don't know about.
Yeah.
But those three strains I know do just fine. And guppies will add to that.
Mollies too.
Mm-hmm. So we've definitely had people bring in their pond bred guppies in October.
Yeah.
And it's been just fine.
Thousands of them. Yes. I don't think that's an exaggeration.
Yes. And in October here, let's say a warm year, we're 50s.
Yeah, I think that's true.
So they can definitely get down nice and low and they're not going to be concerned in your home without a heater.
The Xiphophorus genus and the Pacilia genus, which would be the Pacilia Day family, which includes all of those, but Pacilia would be guppies and mollies. You would have to look for the exceptions that can't take it, not the rule. I think the rule would be they probably can take it cold. And I think Xiphophorus would be the same thing. There are some of the Xiphophorus swordtails that don't want it to be below 74 degrees. Right.
Yeah.
But those are going to be some of the rarer, harder to find. I think it was Xiphophorus birchmani that you've never seen them.
Mm-mm. Right? Yeah, I was almost tempted to say live bearers just because none of the ones that I know can't take it. I know
that's
there are ones,
inaccurate.
You know, I know they've got to be out there like some really hot water live bearers, but I don't know about them.
I'm just going through some Headrender formosa, which is the least killifish that's found in northern Florida.
The common limias and gandeids should be fine.
Yeah, in fact, those are kind of like what Charles was saying about those bettas. The gandeid people I know keep them on the bottom shelf in their fish room, and sometimes that's too warm.
Yeah.
The mountains in Mexico is where most of the gadeas come from. Some of the limias are going to come from some of the tropical Caribbean islands.
Yeah.
And some of those island streams are going to stay pretty warm. But like the Cuban limia, I can't remember which.
That's Vitata, I think.
Vitata. They're going to come from some of the higher elevations in Cuba and be fine in the mid-60s. Yeah. So I think hopefully we didn't, anything on your list of live bears, so we could just talk about live bears for a minute.
Yeah, you can just go. I do have a note about Molly's that I want to bring up, though.
Yeah.
I kind of resent that they somehow got lumped into that like community fish thing.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Because they're very different temperament than like platies and swordtails and guppies. They're pickers. And so like, I think they are not maybe intentionally malicious, but a lot of the fish end up getting picked on by them because of that trait.
True.
They never let up.
So I don't think they're a quote unquote community fish. I think it's a different tank.
Yeah. Even though I don't like that word community, I know where
exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's on the list of easy beginner fish to throw in your tank together.
Right. Yes. Right. Like a lot of people think they'll do fine with things like, let's say a rummy nose tetron. I'm like, that is no.
Right. Yeah.
That's a solid no.
That's solid no.
Well, we have to put it that way because that's the way that other stores put it.
Yeah.
That's how they're being sold.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem.
Another caveat that needs to put in there is some of the fancy type guppies that are the real elegant, really solid colors, really long finnage. Some of those are not going to want that cold water.
Yeah.
They're a little bit too delicate to take the cold water.
Well, think about it. Their body is basically like has all surface area, no mass.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
they right. that's how you lose heat. That's why elephant ears are shaped the way they are.
Right. To disperse heat.
Yeah. Like that's just how it is.
Yeah.
Mutt guppies are the best guppies.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. Yeah. But yeah, I think you were solid going with. Okay, half beaks.
Mm?
Oh no, there are a couple of species of half beaks that can take cooler water as well.
I would think so.
And there are some stingrays. I'm going live bears, right?
Uh-huh.
Great white sharks.
Yeah.
I know, I'm getting a little silly at that point.
Great white sharks can take it how cold?
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty cold, guys.
Pretty darn
pretty cold.
Mm-hmm.
Fun fact, great white sharks are actually one of... I think about a dozen what you would argue quote unquote warm bodied fish. They're it's a strange physiological thing. This is not the podcast for that, but yeah. Look it up. It's cool.
It is very cool. Yep. There are other fish that do that. But yeah, solid choice to just go with you know, you just took my genus Xiphophorus and said, oh yeah, let's one up that.
Let's be even more vague.
Yep, it was a solid choice. That brings it over to you, Charles.
Does it?
It does, because I said Xiphophorus, and she basically
said... You wanted this responsibility, Charles.
I wasn't sure if she was like just tacking on to yours or not.
No, that was my real one.
That was your real one.
I only wrote five for this one.
Oh.
I'm going to try and take one of hers then. Then you're screwed.
It'd probably be pretty easy.
Corydoras paleatus.
Yeah.
Solid choice.
This is a species that in the wild supposedly can be found down into the upper 50s.
Ooh.
I don't doubt that given their wild range.
Yeah.
So
into the mountains of Peru.
Yeah. Like, sure. I would say comfortably in my head, I would say it definitely down into 64. I've 1000% done that.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, for sure.
Probably down in the low 60s just fine. And I would start getting a little antsy once I hit like 60. But they seem to do fine in temperatures up to like 75. I think another, and I'm going to tack this on. I know we've talked about how panda corys are kind of a weird thing. I've kind of started to wonder if the problem is temperature. Mm-hmm. Because the more I find out
it's
about
possible.
Their habitat, they seem to be a true cool water quarry cat. Where the edge of their temperature range in the wild seems to be around 70 degrees Fahrenheit. So if we keep our average tank here at 73...
Oh, so now I want them even less. Seriously.
I still think the idea of like poorly bred is true. Like they behave like that, but I wonder if that's a factor in them too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things going on there. Even just their outrageous popularity compared to other quarries. That type of thing does make for less hardy fish too.
Yeah. So, but yeah, Paleatus quarries, a true temperate water quarry cat, if you will.
But can still go into the tropics.
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
They're a lot of fun.
Very what I like about a lot of the fish on this list is that one of the fish on my list has a temperature range, a natural temperature range of 66 to 87.
And like, I wonder if it's even wider than that, because just looked up, I was typing here. You guys might've seen me. I was like, okay, let's think of a native fish and let's see what temperature range it's listed on. And according to FishBase, which is pretty much just raw data, and it's going to be correct most of the time, at any time that I would have ever known about, it says 1 degree Celsius to 36 degrees Celsius. So I guess all of our bluegill are dead now. They're not coming back next year. Because that's about 34 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is. There's wiggle room.
Right. Right.
Those ranges are just when it was tested.
Yeah. And I've definitely seen bluegill in ponds that when I put my feet in the water felt warm and it was an 80 degree day.
Yeah. Yep. So like, obviously we're not chasing barely surviving, but like,
yeah,
there are few hard and fast rules when it comes to temperature.
There are hard and fast rules when it comes to temperature with many fish, right? A discus, for example. If you keep a discus below 80 degrees, it's going to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it wants to be at 85 to 90. If you keep a discus at 70, it's going to die.
Yeah.
Right? And Betta splendens, they need that 75 to 80 degree temperature. They need that. Mm-hmm. That is accurate. I want to make sure, I'm going to emphasize it again towards the end of the podcast. But just because we're coming up with this list of all of these fish and saying, it's amazing how many fish can take it cold. It is amazing how many fish and how cold some of them can take it. But that doesn't mean most of the fish that we keep is tropical aquarium fish can take it in the mid 60s. Don't do that with a lot of tetras. Don't do that with a lot of cichlids.
And my point there isn't don't care, but we have so many people who seem so worried about hitting 78.
Right. Yeah.
Like, Marriott. Oh, well, I'm trying to get my temperature up to 78 and it's only 76 right now. Okay.
You're good.
You're fine.
You're good.
So, you know. Don't need as much pressure as some people put on themselves.
I'm not texting. You said something specific that triggered a thought for me that I'm looking up.
Okay, I like it. I think there's probably a list of 10 or 15 different quarry cats that can fit that 65 degree temperature threshold and be great at that. And a lot of the ones found in Peru. Not all though.
Are we wait? Is it my turn?
No, it's mine.
It's your turn. Okay.
All right. So I'm gonna go with my fish that I was talking about, 68 to 86 degrees, and it happens to be my all-time favorite fish.
Nice.
The temperature range for Epiplatus annulatus, the clown killifish, and was it down to 68? I wrote it down here. Yeah, down to 68 degrees with Epiplatus annulatus, and that is natural temperature range for those fish, all the way up to into the mid 80s.
Wow.
Where they live. And they have a pretty broad range. And so that means they're found in mountain streams all the way down to the coast where it's more stagnant water and can get much warmer. Breeding on those fish seems to be, as long as you're below 80, because they actually do want it a little bit on the cooler side, but then all the way down, they'll breed at 72 just fine.
Wait, did you say, I just want to be clear because that might be something that might inspire me switching something out that I'm looking up. Right. You said down to 68 degrees?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. That's a great
just
choice.
Just want to be sure.
Right.
A lot of the killies too. Especially some of the smaller ones.
With a lot of the killies, their range is really specific, right? Epiplatus annulatus is one that the range is really broad. Some of the killies that I looked up, because I was trying to find killifish that fit that range. Some of the killies that I looked up, they don't want it below 78. And below 70, they're going to start to suffer almost like a discus.
I would think like the Nothobranchius seem like a pretty...
You'd think so.
You'd think
you?
So. I would think that they would, because their environment isn't going to go through strong changes until they die.
Oh, okay. So specific temperature ranges. That's not necessarily
hot or cold, but like that specificity. That's all I'm thinking about.
You're spot on with that. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, my all-time favorite fish. If someone would make me choose, then I'd punch him in the face for making me choose. I can choose that one.
How dare you?
How dare you? I don't want to choose. I don't want to pick a favorite, but then that's what I would pick.
Right. Well, my next one is just going to be an argument for look it up, because many of the Hyphasabrycon tetras can go just fine in temperatures this range. Some of them cannot. Mm. So I pulled out Ember tetras because I think it's important that we talk about some nano stuff. That's where a lot of people are interested. They can get down into 68 degrees. So can lemon tetras. Those are the two I pulled out for that.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Those to me seem like dainty little fish that couldn't handle that kind of cold.
But it's all about, I mean, in the Amazon, there are all these little tributaries. There's a lot of different elevations. It's about knowing that specific fish. Mm-hmm. I was going to try and come up with an episto, but that is just overwhelming. Because I've had people ask me that before, and I don't know, look up every episto and check.
I think Panduro is one of the cool water ones.
I'm not sure on that.
I wish there was a way you could tell by looking at them.
Yeah.
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 That would be nice.
But it's the same with the tetras. So if you have something you really want, then, you know, do some searching.
Right. It is important to note the difference between 68 and 65.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a thing, right? And with the way that we heat and keep a lot of our homes in these northern cold states where, you know, right now it's 18 degrees outside, we often heat our homes at night into the upper 60s.
It's true.
If we're heating our home into the upper 60s, your Epiplatys annulatus killifish tank is going to drop down to 65.
Right.
Unless there's something to control that. If you keep your home in the low 70s, it can drop down into the upper 60s for a little while, and that's okay. So that's an important distinction when we talk about these fish. We're really kind of pushing it with lemon tetras and clown killies. We're not pushing it in the slightest with paradise fish and white clouds and Palaeotis corys and Xiphophorus species.
Yeah.
Many of them. So I think that's an important important.
It is. Room temperature isn't the same for everybody.
Yes. Yeah. So be aware of the temperatures in your home. If you're not sure, take a glass of water and put a thermometer in it and check it tomorrow morning when you get up before your thermostat kicks up.
And I think the upper level is equally important, too, where in the summer, some people...
That's true.
Let's just open the windows today.
Yeah.
Get that breeze going. Well, the fish don't feel the breeze. Right. It's just hot.
With some of these cooler water fish, that's very, very important. With a discus, doesn't matter.
Right.
Get that up to 100 every once in a while, and they'll be just fine.
We need to talk a little bit about why fish can't tolerate temperatures outside their range, like what happens to them.
Ooh, yeah, nice.
Like you hinted to it a little bit about the betta, where if the temperature is too cold, they'll be sluggish, their metabolism is going to slow down, they're not going to be able to move around the way they should. What happens when it's too high?
Yeah, so how in depth do you want me to get in this physiology?
let's do like a 5 minute
five minute
biology lesson.
So a big thing with a lot of fish is their poikilotherms, which is just a way of classifying organisms by they don't regulate their body temperature. It's they're based on what their environment they're in. And so a lot of organisms have physiological ideals, and a lot of that is based on enzymes. Like every enzyme protein functions best at a particular temperature range. If you start moving outside of that temperature range, those proteins and enzymes and other things, they stop working as well. And so like an organism that finds itself most commonly in a particular temperature range is going to adapt into the direction of predominantly having those proteins and enzymes. So when you're moving outside of that temperature range, let's say you mentioned going above, what starts happening is these metabolism starts getting too high. And if things start happening too fast, it can actually kind of, like, I'm trying to simplify this, but it can break the, like, what's the word I'm looking for here? It can break the...
like the bonds between?
No. If you get hot enough, you can denature proteins. And that's like really absurd. That's actually how you kill a lot of parasites with high temperatures. You start denaturing their own proteins. But you start breaking the chemical reactions that these proteins and stuff function in to like digest, to, you know, just... to make your brain think. So like if the temperature gets too hot, those things just stop working because it's happening too fast. Like the proteins start, like imagine if you're running a car engine too warm, like it will suddenly stop at some point because things that are supposed to be happening aren't happening. Like it's not getting the lubricant it needs. And the brain is the same way. And that's...
the car will go faster but break down sooner.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good analogy.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
There we go. Not good, good stuff.
Not good stuff.
Well, my tetra one was pretty short, Charles. You got one more for us?
Yeah, I do. It's another tetra.
Sweet.
Neon tetras.
Ooh.
So a lot of people come at me and they say, hey, why do neon tetras and cardinal tetras look almost exactly the same? Like, what's the deal there? This is a great example of niche partitioning.
I like big words.
As in... they occupy the same niche except for one variable. With cardinal tetras and neon tetras, that variable is temperature.
Wow.
Interesting.
So I, when you said 68 degrees, I was looking, so what's the temperature range of neon tetras in the wild? I knew down to 72 degrees. I did not know down to 67.
Wow.
So... as when we're talking in the realm of tropical fish, quote unquote, a lot of scientists, once you designate into that partition, they'll say cool water, warm water. Cardinal tetras are the warm water version. Neon tetras are the cool water version.
Interesting.
They do the same thing in different habitats. The difference is temperature.
So we don't want to go above 78 or 80 degrees with a neon.
No. That would
but with a cardinal, 85 to 90 is fine.
Yes.
And 85 is good.
Mm-hmm. Most people I know that spawn cardinal tetras, if they have a temperature listed, it's 82 degrees Fahrenheit, give or take.
Yeah. And spawning for a neon, any idea?
Usually around 72. 72, 74.
I never knew.
Yeah. So I wanted that as a great example of, we don't think about these things sometimes, but like cardinal... like neon tetras, I'm mixing myself up in my own conversation. Neon tetras are a great example of, they're almost not a tropical fish.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. So it's another one that we got to make sure falls under that category of, they can take it down to 67 degrees. If your house is always at 67, that's too cold and you need a heater.
Yeah.
If your house is always at 72 and they're in a warm part of your house, you might be able to get away with no heater on a neon tetra tank, which I would never have said.
Yeah.
But that's fascinating.
Yeah. I knew this niche partitioning existed. I didn't realize how drastic it was.
Yeah.
So is pericardon similans, is that niche partitioned as well?
It doesn't. To my knowledge, someone can tell me I'm wrong, and I would be really excited if you did, because that would neatly sort all of these for me. They seem to not be, at least temperature. They seem to have a similar temperature range to cardinal tetras. But given that they stay smaller, I wonder if like functionally, like they come from similar river systems. I wonder if functionally the niche partitioning is they're going after different bugs. I don't know.
Because they're significantly different in size and behavior.
Because like size-wise, like length, they're almost the same length. But mass-wise, they're almost half the size of a cardinal tetra.
They're skinny.
They're small. Mm-hmm. So there's something happening there, and it's not temperature, but I could see someone figuring out that it's diet.
Yeah. Interesting.
Do they occur in the same areas as the other two?
That, no. So no to neon tetra, kind of with cardinal tetra. They seem to come from the similar stream systems, but I don't know enough about Simulans in the wild. It's the green neon tetra. Sorry, we never mentioned that. I don't know enough to say that, like, if I'm in the stream, I will never see both of them.
Yeah.
They come from the same, they're both Orinoco river basin fish.
Because in a lot of the Amazon, it's just physical barriers that separate some of these fish.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
As skinnier, that would make me think slightly faster moving water.
Maybe.
But yeah, who knows?
Theorizing only. Yeah.
It's such a great genus to learn about because it's so compact and you can see the physical differences between the fish.
Yeah.
I read a paper on it a long time ago, so I'm not 1,000% sure off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure that Simulus is actually more closely related to Axelrade than it is to Inese.
Interesting.
Like, I think Inese is the outlier in that group.
Yeah. The neon is
Inese. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Interesting. All right, so I've got one that surprised me. So one of the ways that I researched this was I just thought of a genus of fish, Googled the genus, and then hit a letter of the alphabet to see what Google would autofill.
Ooh.
Right?
That's fun.
That's one. And so I did Pseudomugel, right? And just started going through the alphabet, and I got to Pseudomugel luminatus. And it surprised me that the neon red dwarf rainbows can take it natural habitat down to 65 degrees.
Nice. I believe it. Really, because for me, it's one of the pond fish staples.
That was exactly what I was going with that. That all of a sudden it was like, wait a minute, I know lots of people that are successful in little patio ponds with those fish and harvesting in September. And so it would make sense. But yeah, down to 65. So to me,
so cool.
Again, we mentioned earlier that difference between 68 and 65 and that it's a notable difference. And these guys hit that 65 degree mark. So I would call them a true, you don't need a heater with those fish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Gorgeous. It's the same thing as with the paradise fish, right? Like they look tropical.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Surprised
but
me.
You know, so does a rainbow shiner, so
yeah, that's true. And what's the darter?
The rainbow darter. Mm-hmm. Oh my god,
when
such
it's
a cool
breeding
fish!
Colors looks very, very tropical.
Neat,
yeah. All right, Amy, number four.
Well, this one might be spoiled by the name, but most hill stream loaches can take cool temperatures really, really well. I pulled out the reticulated specifically because I know it can get down to 68 and it's common enough that most people are bound to see it eventually. But I don't know of any that need hot temperatures off the top of my head. They all come from shallow, fast flowing, higher altitude streams. So the ranges are pretty wide and can dip pretty low.
How low?
For reticulated, it's 68.
Okay.
And that was about what most of them said. But again, that's such a common range to be listed at that I wonder how accurate that data is.
I know it would be quote unquote biotypically correct to have them with a lot of like Betta unimaculata. Mm-hmm. So I have to imagine they should be able to go a little lower.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like pretty much every fish that I was looking at from those same regions was listed with about the same temperature range.
I would be willing to try a hillstream loach down to like 66 and not feel antsy about it myself personally, given what I know about their habitat, what I know about other things that I've kept in their habitat, yada, yada, yada. I don't see why not.
Mm-mm. One of the reasons fish thrive in fast moving habitats is because of oxygen, and faster moving water collects more oxygen. I said collects on purpose. Colder water holds that oxygen better. So that could be part of why hillstream loaches could take them. And and maybe even it would be important that water is moving a little more even as the water gets colder. No, actually, I bet it would be reverse. I bet the warmer the water that is for the hillstream loach, the more you'd want to move it because it would need more oxygen regeneration.
Yeah.
I just had to think through that one. Yeah.
You got there.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I know plenty of people who keep them in warm tanks with canister filters.
Yeah, and they do just fine.
Even, planted tanks.
Yeah, even spawn.
do not keep Hillstream loaches in warm tanks that aren't planted. I think I can say that, right?
I mean, honestly, even if the answer is literally just because it doesn't look as cool.
Exactly.
I think that's a valid argument.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But it is a myth that they need fast flowing water. They need well oxygenated water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very true. I like it. It had to be mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's almost too easy.
Charles.
Zebra / leopard danios.
Oh, definitely.
Nice.
Yep. Hang on.
This one had to make it for me because this was the first fish I ever kept, and I kept it without a heater. Mm-hmm. And I feel like down to 65 is viable with these. I don't see... I can't say for sure because I was young.
Mm-hmm.
But remembering what I remember growing up, that feels like what they have to have been experiencing.
Yeah.
Easy fish. I feel like I don't have a lot to say about them because almost everything that's... They're not as flashy as the white clouds. I will give them that.
Yeah.
But almost every good point we gave about the white clouds other than that is true for these two.
I think you're right. I wouldn't... So a white cloud, I would say, okay, you can get away with a 7-gallon. I wouldn't say that with zebra danios.
I feel like you have to do...
Just because they're slightly larger.
They're slightly larger and they're... Just a smidgen more zippy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Zippy's the word. Faster, I was going to say faster, but zippy's a much better word choice.
Yeah, because like more that. Active doesn't even work, but
no.
They zippy. Move. Yeah, mm-hmm. They move more.
Yeah.
A little bit like those naughty red, the little red squirrels.
Yes.
As opposed to the regular squirrels. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're such a fun fish. I feel like a 10-gallon, though, is viable.
I agreed.
Oh, yeah.
No smaller.
Yeah,
no smaller. No smaller than 10-gallon.
Yeah, I don't have anything else to say that we didn't talk about with the white clouds. Like, yeah. they're a great fish. Try them out.
Super hardy. By the way, the other fish, I told my story about my Xiphophora species.
Mm-hmm.
I also had zebra danios in that tank. I harvested the most incredibly beautiful zebra danios I've ever seen in my life. They weren't black and white. They were blue and yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They did not take it down as cold as the Xiphophora species did. They definitely took it down into the mid to low 60s and maybe even upper 50s and were still okay. But the zebra danios were gone long before. In fact, the Xiphophorus were still swimming around when the zebra danios were gone.
Hmm.
So
I've got two theories.
Okay.
One, whatever food the zebra danios eat couldn't take it that cold. Because
possible.
The Xiphophorus eat plant matter or like snuffle stuff too.
Yeah, but so do zebra danios.
Not as good, but valid points.
They also have a faster metabolism.
True.
It's true.
True.
Those are my two theories.
Yeah.
I also want to throw out, I did say zebra and leopard danios. I am not being cheeky and doing two species. I am in the camp of they're the same species.
Oh, really?
Really?
And they are color morphs, and there's a genetic difference.
Don't the leopards get... quite a bit bigger?
Some of the captive strains, yes, but it is not genetically, it's not different enough. And I say I have a pretty narrow margin. Genetically, I don't think it's...
I think I'm conflating them with fire rings.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Okay.
So, never mind.
Personally, I sit in the camp of, I don't think there's enough difference to say that they're different species. I think it's a color morph. There you go.
Interesting.
Fun fact.
I'm down to my last one, and all right, we're going to have to go through some alternates at the
some
end.
Mm-hmm. Some speed, some lightning. Some
rapid fire lightning round ultimates. But I have one that I just... No, because we're going to do lightning round. I'm going to mention these because I think these are worthy of a little bit more of discussion. And it's super common, but it's not a fish.
Ooh.
Is it shrimp?
It is. Cherry shrimp.
Yeah.
Nice.
Down to 60 for cherry shrimp.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and easily down to 60. But don't bother with heaters on your cherry shrimp, and the colonies should do just fine. I think your colonies will expand more as you get into the 75 to 78 degree range, but I think you will shorten the lifespan of the cherry shrimp as you get warmer. I think they will live, this is theory, but I got a little data to back it up, right?
It matches up with our experiences with other invertebrates.
Yeah, but I think 65 to 70 is an optimum temperature range for Cherry Strip.
Yeah.
And there I went optimum, which means when we're keeping them in our 75 to 78 degree tanks, I don't think that's optimum conditions for
We're kind of stretching it there.
I've heard breeders say 72. 72? That's like the specific temperature they go for.
Yeah.
But
and that could be because you get the growth.
Yeah, I don't know.
And well, they grow fast enough to be commercially viable.
I don't know their habitat. Is this a shrimp that has seasonal variation?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
don't because know. The theory, the hypothesis I'm positing for someone who could answer this question for us is 72 degrees, if their wild range is like 65 to 75, that would be summer.
True.
True.
Yeah, very true.
The weird thing about that species of shrimp is it has a pretty wide range and it has some really distinct lines too. So it might be depending on like how they're mixed and all that stuff too.
Right.
You're all making sense right now.
Mm-hmm. Probably holds true for all of the color morphs of Neocardinia David's eye, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. David eye, I think.
David eye? Or David's eye?
I think it's David eye.
Okay.
Probably. Yeah. But again, like, who knows? Yellow and green strain shrimp are different genetically than red and orange and are different genetically than blue or blue and black.
Yeah. I mean, if you have... So this is getting into population genetics. Genetic drift is like if you've had 10 generations, genetic drift is something that just happens by chance. It's the antithesis of natural selection. Mm. Natural selection is non-random selection. Genetic drift is random selection.
Okay. Right.
Like it's not exactly accurate, but the quintessential example is like a tree gets struck by lightning and it's taken out of the gene pool. That's random.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's assumed to have happened in a population in 10 generations. Shrimp have pretty short generation time. Like if you're talking about like different strains of shrimp, that's a very different, it's the same species, but it's a different thing.
That's true.
History of what that strain was kept in will very much influence what the preferences and ideals of that strain is.
And we've seen that with how much easier locally bred shrimp are to keep than shrimp that aren't.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah.
Right.
I feel like the locally bred shrimp being better for you than locally bred shrimp thing, locally bred fish. Mm-hmm. I think that's way more true with the shrimp, at least with my experience.
Yeah, and probably because of their short genetic lifespan.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is, like, aquarium decorative shrimp are one of the genetic studies I'd most be interested in seeing. Yeah. Just because it's such a weird little environment where it's really fast reproduction, breeding for so many different characteristics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, what are they? Very fun stuff.
All right, Amy. Take us out
with a
bang.
It's my turn for the last one.
Your last one.
Ooh.
Wait, is this... Yes, it is your last one.
Don't
forget
we're going to lightning round.
So. I only rolled 5 this time, guys.
And nobody took any of yours?
You told me about this one today.
Well, that's good.
All right. Well, I knew I wanted to put a rainbow on it, so I just kept searching for my favorite rainbows until I found one that could. And I chose the turquoise.
Excellent. I gotta scratch up my lightning round one.
I was shocked that Praecox couldn't.
Me too.
That was going to be...
Yeah, me too.
Oh, I'm going to put this on there, and it couldn't do it.
72 was their bottom
the minimum.
Range, 68 for the turquoise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's my second favorite. So I did I did turquoise, which is lacustris.
I thought there would be a lot more rainbow fish on the list because they're all found in different mountain streams.
Right.
Almost all of them on the same island. Okay, a couple other islands in there, but many of the Melanotaenia species are found all on that one same island, and it's mountain streams. So I thought, but apparently that island, those mountain streams are nice and toasty warm.
And
most of them.
I think what I ran into is you cannot generalize rainbow fish.
Yes.
Like, I had to search for each individual one, and they all were different. Whereas, you're searching for something in the Amazon, and like I said, it's that 68 to 78 generic, but each rainbow fish had their own special temperature range.
The splendid rainbow, Melanotaenia splendida, can go down to 65, but...
And that's one of the other dwarfs, too, isn't it?
No, they're a good size.
Which one? I might be mixing it up with McCulloch Eye is the other dwarf.
That's another dwarf. Yeah.
I don't know a lot about the genetics of rainbow fish, but from the conversations I've had with people who do know more than me and what I do know about them, my inkling is they function a lot like opistos in the sense that, like, they're gradient of species. And so, like, when you go into any particular stream, you're gonna find a different one, basically. Like,
yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Like, less drastic, like the, what was the talk where he said every stream found this particular species in and it was always in the way?
The Bosmani.
Oh, Bosmani. Yes.
Yeah. Like,
I should have looked up that one. I bet that has a big range.
It's like,
but it was tropical.
Oh, definitely. Really? Yep. Really?
74 or 75 degrees was the bottom end for Bosmani. I looked them up.
Wow.
I kind of did the same thing you did with rainbows. That's how I found the Illuminatus.
Aww.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I, like, clearly not as strong as the opistos, but, like, similar in that sense where, like, there's some gradient niche happening there, and it's interesting, fascinating.
All right, so we need to throw out some little disclaimers before we do our lightning round. And the biggest disclaimer is we did not just come up with a bunch of excuses for you to not properly take care of your fish.
Yes.
Right? And when we talk about these fish that have a low temperature range of 68 degrees, that means you got to pay attention to your house to see if you need a heater.
Yeah.
And you may or may not. Some of these, don't bother with a heater, like the blue paradise fish that Charles mentioned as the first one, and the white clouds, and many of the live bears. No need for a heater. Many of them, you won't need a heater during certain times, but on colder nights, when you're trying to save energy, that's when it might be necessary. Also, lots of the fish that we keep in our store and that we sell and we keep in our tanks absolutely must have a heater, like Betta splendens.
Yeah.
Right? If you see a low temperature range of 72 degrees, you need a heater for your tank.
Mm-hmm.
Need.
And even if you don't, it's still better to have a heater set at 70 than there is to
yes,
not have
as
one.
As a backup. Right. Absolutely true. Yeah. Yes. So in light of that, with the fish that we talked about today, we talked about some of what those low temperatures are. If we didn't talk about it and you're wondering, Fish Base or Seriously Fish are great resources.
Yeah.
One of the things that I did that was a really quick search was I just Googled the scientific name and then the words temperature range. And it came up on the main screen, like right there. And checked the sources because I don't like all the sources I see. And the sources were usually Seriously Fish or Fish Base. So it was reliably sourced information.
A lot of hobbyist sources or sources that are like selling something, they're just going to list a generic, like 78 degrees.
Right. Right.
Which is probably fair and fine for whatever they're selling, but it's not going to give you this information.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Saltwater fish keepers, if all y'all are listening out there, 78 degrees, that one's true.
Saltwater fish keepers, if you're this far, I tip my hat to you, sir.
I've seen some pretty kick-ass cold water reefs lately, though.
That is true.
Yes, but the fish that we typically sell...
Oh, yeah. They're this crazy stuff in those tanks.
78 degrees.
Yeah.
I was sorely tempted to slip in a Catalina goby into this list just to really throw you guys for a loop, though.
Yeah.
But, like, I've seen some really cool stuff online of people who are keeping, like, a 70-degree, like, you know, northeastern U.S. biotope or something like that. That's like a dream type
and
of tank.
They're right. You don't need a heater. But you do need a chiller.
And it's a lot more expensive.
Because in the summer, if you keep your house at 76 degrees, you're going to cook your fish.
Yeah. Either way, you need stability.
Yes, stability. But anyway, we're talking about freshwater on this one.
Yeah.
So let's lightning round it.
Me?
You don't have any alternates.
I don't have any alternates.
Me first or you first?
You go ahead.
Buenos Aires tetra.
Mm. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yep, for sure. Nothobranchus rakovii.
Interesting.
And actually, that one,
wow,
like you talked about specific ranges, they don't like it above 72.
I believe it.
Really?
Yes.
I did not.
And yet we've bred it at 75.
Well, those fish were in the basement.
It's true.
In the corner.
Yeah.
So
I'd be curious to see.
When I was breeding Eggers Eye, they were definitely not heated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Specific fun. Ranges with Noth Brancius. All right, go.
Odessa barb.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and many of the barbs in that genus. Mm-hmm. I had to, I can't believe I didn't put it on my main list, but my Lake and Lay Daniels.
Yeah.
My tank at home does not have a heater. I have Lake and Lay Daniels that are probably 14 years old or older, and they're doing great. And it's all winter long, that tank is about 66 degrees.
Cherry barbs.
Cherry barbs, for sure. Upsarius Daniels.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, down into the low 60s with Upsarius Daniels. Just fine.
I'm out of alternates.
You are?
That puts a Celestial Pearl Daniels on this list, too.
That is actually true. Yeah. I almost put them on, but the Zebra Daniels are closer to my heart. The CPDs, they spawn best at 70 degrees.
Yeah, yeah. American Flagfish?
Oh, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Heterandria Formosa we briefly touched on. And we're only going to lightning round fish. We're not going to go into detail on this fish. Goldfish.
Okay, and the episode is over. We made it an hour, guys.
We did. All right, good job.
Talking about cold water fish that aren't goldfish.
Yes, nice job. Nice job.
Oh, and not dojo loaches.
No. Although, you know, we almost should mention them because they are cold water fish. They are illegal in Michigan, but there are many states that they're not illegal. So, weather loaches.
But they're illegal because they can handle cold and they're...
Exactly.
They're here in Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Painful.
Painful.
I did find that coolies could go down to 72.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
just the regular species of coolie loach.
A lot of moving tropical streams are going to end up down in the 72 to 75 degree range.
Mm-hmm.
Even down right at the equator, if it's moving. When it's not moving water, it's going to cook. Mm. Yeah.
So the lesson learned is Google it. But it is a question we get asked a lot.
It is.
Yeah.
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 Where would you go? Fish Bay, Seriously Fish, and if neither of those has it, try a Google Scholar search.
Or
Wikipedia.
Colors Aquarium Gallery podcast listeners group and ask us the question and we'll research it for you.
Yeah.
Or email it to podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com.
And label it as not for Charles's eyes.
And we'll read it on the air.
Yeah. Ooh, and if it stumps us, that'd be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
What if we just say best question gets a t-shirt and we decide what the best one is?
That's perfect. Yes, that's perfect. Best question. There we go. Who's your motivation right there?
Whose line is it anyway? Rules. There are no rules and it's entirely dependent on our mood. Good luck.
Yeah. The points are made up and the rules don't matter.
Exactly.
Except you might get a t-shirt.
All right. Well, you know where to find us. You know what to send us. Any other things we need to plug?
Did we shameless plug again?
Buy merch, buy live aquarium plants, buy aquarium supplies at watercolorsaquariumgallery.com.
There we go. And as always, thank you so much for listening. Let's have lots of fun and keep those hands wet.